It's time for Mech Geek Gab, and listener Joe brings us our quick tip of the week with a very simple music hack. I sometimes travel outside the country, and I don't always have cellular or even Wi-Fi service. I'm stuck with what is downloaded on my devices. Like many folks, I make playlists by decades, 70s, 80s, 90s. I found simply making a playlist from 1975 through 1985, I get a fresh sound when I hit shuffle. Coming up with other odd lists is a good way to break my monotony as well. A simple, easy way to mix things up. So year-based music playlists. Great tip. More tips like this, plus your questions answered today on Mac Geek Gab 1123 for Monday, January 5th, 2026. Happy New Year. Woo-hoo!
Folks, and indeed, Happy New Year, and welcome to Mac Geek Up, the show where you send in tips like that. We share them. You send in cool stuff found. We share them. You send in questions. We share them. We answer them, hopefully, or at least provide some troubleshooting assistance and guidance, all with the goal of each and every one of us getting to learn at least five new things every single time we get together here. On National Whipped Cream Day, first time for this show in 2026 in Durham, New Hampshire, I'm Dave Hamilton.
And here in South Dakota, I'm Adam Christensen. Well, whipped cream day, that could be fun.
Sure, why not?
In a few different ways.
There you go. Love whipped cream. It's great.
I love ice cream, so yeah. I'm seeing a sundae in my future, maybe.
There you go. Perfect.
Because we're past pumpkin pie, or maybe not. Maybe I can still get a pumpkin pie.
Maybe.
I like whipped cream on pumpkin pie, too.
Maybe. There you go. Yep. And it's just the two of us today, Adam. Because Pilot Pete is we don't know where Pete is today, candidly.
AWOL.
Yeah. Yeah, we're hoping he's just snoozing, so... You know,
yeah, hopefully he's getting some extra rest after the New Year's holiday.
That's right. Although,
technically, recording on.
Yeah, we're actually recording this in last year. Eve. That's right. Yeah, New Year's Eve. That's right. But
so, hopefully he hasn't started yet.
That's right. Maybe he has. Who knows? Maybe the celebrations have begun. Good for him. And Pete and I, by the time this episode comes out, will be in Vegas, assuming all goes according to plan, in Vegas. To cover CES and bring you all of that stuff. So we will be pushing all kinds of things out to our throughout the week to the YouTube feed and to Instagram. So make sure you subscribe to one or both of those so that you can just see all of the different things we're doing. We will, next week's episode will be at least largely, if not entirely, a cool stuff found from CES kind of episode that we will likely record from there if the technology and bandwidth gods at least decide to smirk in our direction. I don't know if they'll smile in our direction,
right.
But, you know, we'll take what we can get. I'm not sure if we'll be able to loop Adam in on that. That depends on timing and the bandwidth gods.
See.
So yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Things get a little saturated in Vegas, cellular Wi-Fi and all otherwise with all those folks trying to do that coverage, I would imagine.
So. Yeah, our hotel Wi-Fi was terrible last year, as you might remember us discussing when we talked about it on the show. Yep. But none of that would be possible without our CES 2026 sponsors, which we'll talk a little bit more in depth about during this episode. But that would be Ecamm, Eero, BusyCal, MacPaw, and CCC Backup. We'll talk a little bit in depth about those in a little bit. But here we are. Shall we do?
Here we are.
Shall we do more quick tips, Adam? Is it time?
Abso-smurfly.
Okay. all right. So from there, we are moving on to John, who has a timely travel quick tip. Says, when we were recently traveling into a remote backcountry lodge, I had turned on airplane mode on my iPhone 16 Pro. My wife did not turn this on. And about 24 hours later, I looked and my phone had 96% battery. Hers had 22% battery. He says, I attribute this to her not turning on airplane mode as her phone was trying to ping a non-existent cell tower. If this is correct, and I believe it is, my suggestion is to put your phone in airplane mode when you are out of cell coverage. I don't know if you can set this up as a shortcut or by another method. If there's any way of doing this, I would appreciate if you could share it. So I will say I tend to agree with John's assessment. Yeah, it hunting for a cell signal is one of the most battery intensive tasks that your phone can do with radios.
Yeah, GPS as well. You know, I don't know if that is disabled also when you're in airplane mode or not.
But. Ish. I think there's been some discussion about that. That's kind of, yeah, yeah. But you're right. Yes, GPS as well. Yeah. And it's, yeah, and it's why I highly recommend putting your phone in airplane mode on an airplane, because you will be dancing over the tops of cell towers and your phone will be fighting the whole time, and then you land and you got nothing left. So
that's what I was just about to add. Cause we were traveling and I usually put mine in an airplane mode for that exact reason. Not because, you know, I'm worried like the plane's going to go down or something. My cellular is on, but, I forgot to, and sure enough, my battery just, I mean, it was gone very, very quickly. So
I've done the same thing. It's like, oh dang it, you know, what was I thinking? And the answer was I was not thinking. So
exactly. All right, let me take us to Steve, who has a little health tip for us. He says, I just discovered something maybe everybody knows except me. I wanted to schedule eye drops 4 times a day for 4 days. I asked Siri, haha, what a joke, that did not work at all. Then I tried reminders to set a day and time and repeat daily or repeat weekly, but could not do the schedule I wanted. Then I tried calendar, same thing, you cannot set 4 times a day or for 4 days only. So I gave up for a while, but I thought in 2025, a computer should be able to do so. So I asked ChatGPT, how do I do this on iOS? And lo and behold, it told me the health app medications, add medication, and you can set an exact schedule. I could set the exact schedule that I wanted, as well as some other things like the type of drug, the color of the bottle, things like that. Why the heck reminders or calendar can't do the same thing is beyond me. But thanks for the podcast, Steve. In Japan. Oh, that's cool.
Do you use this feature in the health
app? Actually do. I set this up. Yeah. It's good just to know, like, have a running list of the things that I am taking, and you know what they actually are. So that's nice to put that stuff in there, because then I know exactly what I have. And then, yeah, I have certain medications that I need to take, or I'm supposed to take daily. According to my doctor, mostly just allergy stuff.
Sure.
I don't take a lot of medications. I don't like to take a lot of medication, but I have like Flonase that I have to do daily and a couple other things. And then I forget what I got something at some point, and there was some pill. It was probably an antibiotic, and it was like very important. Take it, you know, 2 times a day at these specific times for this, you know, for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And you want to take all that stuff. So yeah, I've set it up for that. It's great, yeah, in the health app.
When I was battling Lyme disease this summer, certainly did not have all of my mental faculties. I was living in a fog for like 2 months. Was traveling a bunch. I found the reminders for taking exactly what you were saying, you know, taking those antibiotics and other things that I was on to kind of mitigate symptoms and that sort of thing, because I would forget. Like there were moments where I was like, well, wait, which did I take that yet today? Because, you know, I was just taking it constantly. Right. And it was like, yes, I logged it. I took it. Okay, great. Now I know. Yep, good, fine. And it's very helpful. Yeah, very helpful.
Yeah, and you're right. I forgot. That's the other thing is like when it reminds you, it's not just reminding you. When you take it, you push the button and say, yeah, I took it. It's logging that so you can see that. It's another thing you can provide to your doctor. Like the number of times I've forgotten, you know, common question when you go to see the doctor, what medications are you taking? And you'll forget something. It's like, oh, yeah, no, here's
a list.
This is what
I've Yep.
I know exactly what I've been taking and what, or what I haven't been taking. Either,
yeah.
Or
right.
What I stopped taking and when I stopped taking it and like all those things. So
yeah,
just good information to have.
There are two things about this, about Steve's note here that I want to address. The first is, Steve started the note by saying, I just discovered something. Maybe everybody knows about it except me. That is the, please, anytime you have that thought, send it in to feedback@macgeekup.com because that is the formula for a fantastic quick tip.
Exactly. Feedback@macgeekup.com is the place to go. One more time, just for Pete, feedback@macgeekup.com.
There you go. It really is because you aren't the only one that doesn't know. Yes, sure. Adam and I both happen to know about this because we wound up using the feature for ourselves, but not everybody's needed to use it yet. Not everybody knows. The other thing that I wanted to do, I mentioned that I would talk about each of our CES sponsors, and I wasn't exactly sure how I was going to integrate each of them into the show. But when Steve was saying he tried to do these reminders and set a day and a time and repeat only on certain days and end at a certain time and all that stuff and couldn't do the schedule that you wanted, BusyCal is my answer to this. And I probably would have mentioned it anyway, even if they weren't one of our CES sponsors. But BusyCal is an app that I've been using for years because of things like that. It is like Calendar Pro. It has all of these little nuances. And that particular one, managing reminders, is just scratching the surface. You can have different sets and doing different things. And it really, I can't imagine living without BusyCal on both my, you know, my desktop machines and my iPhone. I run the app on the phone too. And because the bonus for you, because they're a CES sponsor, they have a coupon, MacGeek10, which is in the show notes. And so you can save 10% on that. So, yes, there you go. Check out BusyCal if you want. The health app with the medication thing is the right app for what Steve is specifically talking about here. But for those general things where you want a little more control over your recurring reminders and that sort of thing, BusyCal, check it out. I can't recommend it highly enough. So, and again, thanks to them for being one of our CES sponsors. All right.
Cool.
Yeah. Moving on to Avraham's quick tip, which I'm pretty sure I have. Oh yeah. 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 He says, again, it starts, it could be that everybody already knows about this. Well, he says, but I figured I'd share it anyway because it was very helpful for me. On my Mac, I use the screenshot app a lot throughout the day, but I was always frustrated whenever I had to take a screenshot of something on the lower portion of my screen because after clicking and launching the screenshot app in the dock, the screen freezes for the screenshot, and invariably I would have a portion of the screenshot app or its own dialog box in the capture. I know that I could move the dock to the side to avoid this or find and double click the actual app in the applications folder and bring it up in Launchpad, but I need it so many times a day that I knew there must be an easier way. Well, he says, Command-Shift-5 is a great way to bring the screenshot selection right up without having to launch any apps or click anything in the dock or anything like that. I hope that this tip is useful for someone else who is also ripping their hair out about this. When this tip came in, I realized we talk about Command-Shift-5 and its predecessors, Command-Shift-3 and Command-Shift-4, on the show all the time, with the assumption that everybody knows and uses them. My surprise, and as we were discussing this pre-show, Adam, I was like, what's he talking about a screenshot app? And sure enough, my tip for this is in the utilities folder, you pointed out there's a screenshot app.
Yeah. There's a bunch of little things in the utilities app that I think, you know, often get overlooked. I don't use a ton of them, but, you know, every once in a while, like print center's in there that, you know, if you want to see what's going on with your printer as you're printing something, I think it usually comes up when you're printing, but, you know, you can go in there. And I think if you have a supported printer, it'll even kind of tell you some things like, you know, your ink levels and all that sort of stuff. And you got the grapher kind of graphing calculator tool. One I use that from time to time that I always forget about, but we'll pull it up, is the digital color meter for reading colors on, you know, getting the hex codes or the RGB codes or whatever.
I love the digital color meter. Whenever I'm doing things, it allows you to float over once you launch the app, it just sits there, and you can float your mouse over any window on the screen, any pixel on the screen. It doesn't have to be part of the Digital Color Meter app, and it will show you in the Digital Color Meter exactly what, like you said, what its RGB numbers are, so you can go plug those in to whatever graphics program you're using to match a color or whatever. So, yeah.
You know what else is in here that probably fewer and fewer people need, but it's still in here? I just saw airport utility. So I guess if you still have an airport, you could use that.
Huh. Why is this here?
Because people still have airports and use them, I would assume. Like,
yeah, but like, what else could you do with airport utility? Is there?
I think it's exclusively for managing your airport yeah. base stations.
I know on the iPhone. So here's a bonus quick tip: on the iPhone, you can. Oh, now I got to remember how to do it. I think you need to first go into Settings, Apps, Airport Utility, and turn on the Wi-Fi scanner. Right. So in the Settings app, go into the apps section, go to airport utility, all the way at the bottom is Wi-Fi scanner. Then when you launch airport utility, and again, this is on your phone, not on your Mac, you get a Wi-Fi scan button in the upper right. And you can use that to see all of the base stations or access points near you.
Yeah. So, the one I missed was the network utility that used to be in there. It was basically NetStat, you know, with a GUI, but
yeah,
they took that away as far as I know.
They did. They did. We've talked about replacement apps for that. And
yeah, there's a bunch.
Yeah. Candidly, I can't remember any of them because I just do it all from the terminal now, but
exactly. Yeah.
But there are replacement apps for that for sure.
Yeah. There's all kinds of stuff you can do, but it was always nice to have a little built in thing.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. That's right. Look at this. Huh? And Ooh. There's a screenshot app. Sure enough, clear as day, right there. Love that. I didn't even know about Grapher.
There's all those love.
I've never launched Grapher before in my life, Adam. This is amazing. Huh. Okay. Yep.
I mean, if you're into that sort of thing, I don't know how to use it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Pete woke up.
Pete's okay. We've heard from Pete. So everything's okay. Yeah. 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 So I think he might join us at some point. So, but we're going to keep on trucking through this.
Yeah, we'll keep going. I got one from Andrew here.
Yep.
He says, in last week's show, number 1115, this must be older note, a listener asked about bookmark management. So a few weeks back, I think, because we're 1123 today.
Yeah. Is that right? 1123 today. Yeah.
To me, bookmarks are like my garden. They're either unattended or not of much interest or get wildly out of control. These days, all my bookmarks are in folders in the Safari favorites bar. View favorites bar in Safari. Safari is the only browser that supports the favorites bar on iPad OS. It's not supported in Chrome, Firefox, Edge, etc. I regularly curate these, but they rarely change. I also have intranet for myself that only I can see, and it's done through Google Sites. It's simple and free. In short, you can create a web page with all your bookmarks as links. It takes an hour or so to build, and it's quick and easy to change as your needs or interests change. You can access it via a free Google account. You can keep it to yourself or share it with friends and family, colleagues, or an interest group. You authorize who can see it via Google accounts. Google Sites is pretty cool, and he provides a link that we'll provide in the show notes, sites.google.com. I have my intranet as my homepage and start page on all my devices, so then he has all his links and all his stuff that he needs. I recently created a similar and simple intranet for a client, and we shared it among employees and contractors. It quickly boosted productivity and reduced interruptions with where is this type questions.
Huh.
So give it a go, Andrew.
That's a good tip.
Huh. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that.
I mean, yeah. You probably could do something. Well, you used to be able to. I was trying to think if there's a way to set this up through your iCloud account, you know, through documents and stuff by just building a simple web page.
Oh.
You know,
yeah.
And setting that to the homepage and having that sync across your devices. But I think Apple turned off, because I know you used to be able to load. like iCloud pages through a browser. Like, but I think Apple got rid of that capability. I'm trying to remember when that was.
I know what you're talking
about. I remember hosting. It was back in the it started with iTools, and then iTools went away because they provided basically website hosting. You could put a simple HTML page up there, and then it kind of worked long after that. And I think they finally killed it a few years back. I don't think you can host a web page on your iCloud anymore.
Right. Yeah, no, I don't think you can. Thankfully, you used to be able to because we hosted Mac Geek Gab's audio on our iCloud for a long time.
We all did in early days. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. That's where I had my original audio files before Libsyn came along.
Right. Yeah. Before there was podcast hosting, Apple was kind to many of us and in not enforcing their bandwidth limits. They wanted to help kind of jumpstart the whole podcasting thing. Yeah.
Well, there weren't that many people listening, let's be honest.
Yeah, it was different. In the early days. I don't know, because...
Before iTunes.
Oh, you started way before us. Oh, yeah. No, they specifically reached out to us because they were going to feature it in iTunes. They're like, yeah, put it here, because we don't want your audio to... We don't want to feature you and then have your audio go down. But that was 6 months after you started. Exactly, in fact. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. All right. Jason has a tip from related to last week. He said you were talking about issues with your VPN getting stuck in the network stack on your phone and kill switch keeping you from doing anything. He says instead of uninstalling the VPN to solve it, he says, I have often found that I have much better luck turning the VPN off from within the VPN app itself and not in iOS settings. Sometimes if I have an issue, I will toggle the VPN on and off in iOS settings and then also toggle it on and then off in the actual app. I find doing it in the app will clear the issue. It seems like there's some kind of disconnect between doing it in the app and the iOS settings. Purely guessing, but I think maybe, as you said, there's multiple things like kill switch that the VPN is actually working with and the app has control over that, whereas other things do not. Yeah, makes sense. Yeah, that's great advice, Jason, is the app can be your friend because it has more controls than just the slider for one of the features. You can go into the app and turn off kill switch and turn off all that other stuff. So, yavol, fun stuff. Ooh. Yep. Ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, Pilot Pete. A wild Pete has appeared. He's muted. Of course, we can't hear him. All right. Well, never mind.
Yeah, we're going to do technical audio stuff. But until he gets here, I got a quick one from Joe.
Okay.
We can do real quick related to this whole VPN sort of stuff. He says, finally, I don't know if you've discussed this on the show, but I found a way to avoid using my travel router. Simply used the NordVPN app on the Apple TV. I brought with me to Canada. It works 95% for 95% of streaming services, Netflix, Amazon, ESPN Plus, Peacock. So this is related to, being able to access region-locked content when you're out of region. So I guess there's a NordVPN app for Apple TV.
There are all kinds.
Install that and use that if you're a NordVPN subscriber.
Yeah, with all existing generation Apple TVs, the only location data that they provide through to other apps is by letting they don't provide location data through. So apps have to simply look at what the app can see as your IP address, and it has to go by that. That's the only data they don't provide any other signals as to where that device might be. So being connected to a VPN solves that. We do that. We use Tailscale. My son and daughter use Tailscale on the Apple TV, connecting to an exit node in our house. And that way, no matter where they are, we can all watch things as though we are in one home. And that makes things a little bit easier for some of that stuff. So, especially when one of the people is in Italy. So,
I might need to get into that because we're running into that problem now with certain services getting snippy, even though we're all in the same family. We're on the same family account, but it's like,
yes.
Oh, you have to be in the actual same house. It's like,
so Apple TV obviously can run as a VPN client.
Right.
I've also found, though, that running the Tailscale exit node on my Apple TV is faster than running it on like my Synology disk station or anything else. So when I say that the kids connect their Apple TVs to our house as an exit node, they're actually connecting their Apple TVs to our Apple TV. I didn't want to say it quite that way initially because it sounds very confusing when you say that. Setting it up as the exit node, and the Apple TV's on all the time, so it's totally fine, and it works great. It's seamless for all of us, which is really all you can ask for. Yeah, so yeah, works well. I mean, it doesn't hurt that, well, at least two of us have fiber connections, gigabit fiber. Our daughter in Italy. I don't know how people in Italy deal with the internet access. Like, it's all wireless internet, and it sucks most of the time. And I just don't know how people survive over there. And it's not just her. I've heard this from. I've heard this from other people too. And it's like, people are like, it's like living in a third world country. You know, it's like, I don't get it. It, like, I don't know what I would do if I lived there. But I was talking just like another fellow nerd who happens to live in Italy. And they're like, it sucks. It's terrible. Like, how is this not fixed? Anyway. How are you, Pete?
Good morning. Pete. Well, you said not without further ado, but I decided to add some ado in there by not plugging in my mic. So I shouted out the window as loudly as I could, but none of you could hear me.
No.
So I went ahead and plugged in the mic. Yeah.
Thanks
for
doing that.
Sorry about the late show.
Oh, yeah. It was your late arrival. The show started on time, man. We had an on-time start.
Right? That's what I meant. Yeah. Yep. So sorry I got here late.
Sorry.
My bad. One other note on that very topic is that no matter what you're using, if you're trying to use something like YouTube TV or other service like that, and you're on your iPad or your iPhone, it doesn't matter where your exit node is. It gives geolocation. It goes, oh, no. You don't get to use what you've paid for.
Right.
But thanks for playing the home game, or the away game in this case.
And that's a really good point. And that's why I was careful saying what I said before when I said all currently available Apple TVs don't give location signals through to apps. I don't know what's going to happen with future Apple TVs,
sure.
Right? So, or future software on the Apple TV, but yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, that's nice. So I'm trying to think then, you would use, if you're watching your Apple TV at home from your iPad, you should be able to.
This is why I didn't want to say that I was using my Apple TV as the server. No, because it gets confusing. Yeah. The only part that it doesn't matter what device is an exit node for Tailscale. It just matters that the exit node exists in my house. It just so happens that I've chosen to use my Apple TV as an exit node because, as an unrelated quick tip, it turns out the Apple TV is a faster exit node than other things that I have.
Right.
But yeah.
I wonder if it's faster than my Mini, because that's what I use. Is
probably
exit
not.
Node.
It's faster than my disk stations for
Synology
sure.
Drive.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. But yeah, probably not faster than your Mini. No, the Mini.
No, I would doubt it.
Yeah, for sure.
Cool.
Yipper. All right. Moving on to Ben. We were talking in episode 1121 about various things. He says you responded to Albert's question about what Mac to get. And Pete mentioned looking at refurb.me, but came up empty on a good deal. He says this surprised me because that site lists third-party refurbished models, but doesn't reliably list those sold by Apple. This led Dave to conclude that buying new was the best choice. He says, instead, I recommend visiting Refurb Tracker, which consistently lists configurations sold by Apple, shows which are in stock, and even offers email notifications when out-of-stock units become available. You simply select one or more models, enter the keywords related to your desired configuration, and Apple differentiates enough to limit how much you actually have to type. And he goes through, he kind of checked for, various things. And he's right. Yeah, Refurb Tracker is a great site. So thank you for that reminder, Ben. It's one of my favorites.
Oh, stupid question here. Is it Refurb Tracker?
Refurb-tracker.com.
Dash Tracker. Yep. Okay.
We'll put links in the show notes. Refurb
Tracker is for sale.
Yeah, no, Refurb-tracker. Super handy. Super handy. Yep.
They should buy it without the dash.
Well, they probably don't want to have to. And if you search for Refurb Tracker, you find the right one.
That's right. It's on you.
All right. You want to take us to Ben, Adam?
Yeah. Ben says, in an episode some months ago between 1062 and 1088, there was a tip about closing Safari tabs. And Dave quipped, how are Safari tabs related? His question wondered how Safari decides which tab becomes active after one closes another tab, as it is not always linear. In fact, there are some smarts embedded in this behavior. Suppose you've opened one or more tabs in the background by command clicking on links on a given page, and also created additional tabs either manually or by command clicking links on an unrelated page. When you close the last tab in the first group, Safari will make the tab to the left active rather than the next one to the right, which is from a different group. It's difficult to explain, but let me know if you can figure it out or need a demonstration.
Very good.
I'm not sure I followed all that, but I kind of get what he's saying.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. So there's some rhyme or reason to it.
that's the tip. There's kind of some rhyme or reason based on, it sounds like, how they were grouped and how you opened them. And
yeah,
it has some kind of memory of like what you were doing.
And it probably tries to be intelligent about it. That's interesting. Okay. Yeah. All right. Shall we do some don't get caughts, guys?
Some don't get caughts.
Try not to get caught
first.
Like me.
Doug, okay. Right?
Yeah, Doug. Yeah.
Doug says, Time Machine now warns you if your drive is too small. This was new. I set up Time Machine backups for different people very often, but I've never seen this message before. Disk not recommended for backups. This disk is smaller than the recommended size for backing up this Mac, since Time Machine will never delete the last remaining backup. Using a backup disk twice the size of the disks being backed up is suggested to allow for future large incremental backups. So that's been my general recommendation. In this case, the 1 terabyte SSD had been in use as a Time Machine destination for a year or so on an Intel iMac with a 1 terabyte internal. After that died, we migrated and opted to inherit the backup on a new 2 terabyte Apple Silicon Mac. Well, that's probably why it's warning you that it's too small. Yeah. Inheriting failed, so we wiped and tried again, and were then presented with the message. Given that the owner of this machine will have to 600 gigs of data after some cleanup, I'm sure it'll be fine. Still don't get caught. I would still recommend, you know, with the price of drives, just double the internal. But I guess if you're not using it all, I mean, yeah, you're probably going to be fine, but
I
don't know.
I would go with double what you're using.
At least,
a backup kind of guideline. Yeah, at least. Yeah. But that generally has worked out well and keeps Time Machine from, because it will get into that spot, and we've talked about it on the show, where it can't back up anymore, and because there's nothing left to prune, and it kind of gets wedged. And double what you're using generally gives it enough breathing room to at least be able to keep up with that scenario. So
yeah, would you recommend like more on a Synology drive or something like that, Dave? For instance, if you got a 1 terabyte drive, go to 4 or 5 terabytes for pack, or is that too much?
For me, I go double. I can always increase the quota on a Synology drive, and sure. And you definitely want to employ quotas if you're doing that, because otherwise it'll just consume everything. But you can set those quotas in Time Machine now, which we've talked about, which is handy, but,
right.
But the, yeah, I don't, I mean, unless you really want that, that length of a history, but I don't, you know, Time Machine is kind of, it's not my primary backup anyway. So I don't need to dedicate a ton of storage to it. I kind of have it as a safety net, if you will. So, yeah.
Yeah. It's more about that. It's more about that history, having some kind of history, if you want to use that feature of it. I mean, that's kind of one of the advantages of, in my opinion, of Time Machine backups, even though I very rarely have ever used that functionality. But when you need it,
yeah,
you're like really glad it's there. You're
glad it's there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Pete doesn't know this, but we're just kind of taking the opportunity to talk about each of our CES sponsors throughout this. And it seems like our topics keep introducing opportunities to talk about them. And I use these things, right? So CCC Backup is my primary backup, and it just so happens they are also one of our CES 2026 sponsors. But that's my primary way of really granularly controlling what I'm backing up, when it's being backed up, where it's going, how they've got a safety net built into that too. So you can, and what their safety net does is it, if it deletes something, I have it set where if it deletes something from the destination, it puts it off to the side and saves it for a little bit to kind of catch me if I wound up deleting something that I didn't want to, but very configurable. And it's an app I've used for, gosh, probably a decade or more now. And I love it because I don't think about it. I just, every now and then it tells me there's an update and it's like, great, let's do an update. Sounds good.
Yep.
And it's in those moments. I do highly recommend though, on my calendar, I have a monthly event to check my backups. Now, do I check every single backup every single month? No. But whatever Mac I'm on, when I see that reminder, I look and make sure that things are just moving and I'm getting everything. And that way, at least a couple times a year per computer, I'm checking into things and just making sure it's all going well. So, yeah, doing a little backup audit for yourself. Not a bad little tip. At least I've found it to be pretty good.
Yeah. Yep. So I wanted to add one last thing on that.
Yeah.
You know, double the storage that you're using, which I agree with. The thing I worry about with this particular scenario is the person's upgrading from a Mac with 1 terabyte of storage going to a Mac with 2 terabytes of storage and the statement that, well, they're only going to use 500 to 600 gigabytes because as we know, because we're all humans, the majority of people, I mean, that's great. If you're the type of person who like really is going to manage your storage and like keep it at that level, fine, do that. I know for me, and I know for a majority of people out there, you're going to use what you have, right?
Yep.
You're going to like put files on there. If you don't have to delete it, you're not going to clean it up.
Nope.
You're just going to keep adding and adding and adding and adding and adding. So just be honest with yourself about
it. It's like your salary. You're going to spend what you make.
Don't do that. If you can help
Hopefully not.
Yeah. Yeah. Fair.
How often in life did you go, oh, I got a raise, I'll be able to save all this money? No, maybe not.
Yeah. I just know with storage, we use what you use what you have. Like you most do, people for sure. use, you know, it's like, it's sure. Here's an even better analogy, I think, for most people. When you get a bigger house, you suddenly have a lot more stuff, and not that you're using a lot of it, but you have places to put stuff and you just leave it there. And then, you know, then you, when you downsize, you go, how the heck did I, what did I do?
What did I, yeah. Or when your kids move out, you start using their rooms as extra storage.
We're doing that.
Yeah, we are too. I'm not really proud of it, but
yeah. That was a great George Carlin routine. Get a bigger house, get more stuff.
Exactly.
Yep. Bad. Yep.
Not good, folks.
No, no, but it is the human condition. I'll take this opportunity to talk about another CES sponsor because MacPaw makes Clean My Mac and tons of, and then through SetApp offers tons of other fantastic utilities. But Clean My Mac is a great way to at least see. I like the space lens feature in Clean My Mac for what we're talking about here. Mm-hmm. At least I get to see where I am using all of this space up. Whether I choose to delete it or not is personal decisions. But at least I am eyes wide open with it and can find, oh, yeah, I see where that is. Okay, I got to clean that up. I got to do this. I got to, you know, and you can tighten up on space when you do start hitting those walls. That's really the only time I launch it. I don't, if I have, you know, 500 gigs free on a drive, I launch Clean My Mac to do other things, but I don't launch Space Lens because I don't care. But when I've got like 50 gigs left, you betcha, that's when I'm launching Space Lens and trying to figure out what I need to do to clean it up. So, yeah.
Yep. The uninstall feature too is great because it grabs all the little bits and pieces of extra stuff that
can
eat up storage.
Yeah,
as opposed to just dragging it out of the applications folder.
That's for sure. Yep. I look forward to smarter and smarter uninstallers coming now that we have more like pattern matching and the ability to kind of monitor things and all of that too. But that's just me being Dave. I don't have any advanced knowledge of anything that MacPaw's doing. I just want to make sure that those are two separate things. But really, wouldn't it be great if something was like watching what an app did, where it created files, did all those things, and then when you uninstall the app, it doesn't just delete what it like knows about in a database. If it like deleted, oh, here's all these other things that this app created. That would be very interesting. I don't know. Yeah.
Another great feature of that is it shows you like when you last actually used an app too. So I often find things that I totally forgot about. It's like, oh yeah, I installed that 3 years ago and haven't touched it.
Yeah.
Get rid of that.
Get rid of it. Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
You want to take us to the next Don't Get Caught, Pete?
I can do so. Yeah. Jose wrote in and said, be aware if you're storing notes on my insert your device name here. So the notes issue from 1104, David wrote in and mentioned he was having an issue with a quick note he had created in Apple's Notes app, and he'd lost the note. Is it possible that he created the note under the on my Mac, on my iPad, or on my iPhone section of his device? He didn't mention which device it was in his note to us. And that's why he's not seeing the note on his other devices. The quote on my device, unquote, section stores the note only on the device you created the note in. To have your notes sync to other devices, create the note under the iCloud section of the notes. You can also move notes you create under the On My Device section to the iCloud section if you like. You have the option to have only iCloud notes or both iCloud notes and On My Device notes. In settings, you can turn the On My Device notes on or off. Hope this helps, Jose. And we had someone with an email section as well. Similarly, he had email that wasn't syncing, and he had a mailbox that was on my Mac only, or on my iPad.
Yeah,
is my recollection. Yeah, recently.
Same thing. Yeah,
yeah. It's not blatantly obvious that it's not syncing for you, and so
I highly recommend if you don't have specific reason to leave the on my iPhone, on my Mac, on my device notes on, I highly recommend turning it off, because that way there's no risk of accidentally storing a note there. Certainly, if you have a specific reason to do it, then eyes wide open. The feature is there. But by default, man, my advice is leave that off and let it all just be in the one corpus of iCloud notes. Now, we can rant about how iCloud notes syncing is terribly inefficient and doesn't do things the way I would like them, but it does eventually do them usually. So, you know, there's that.
Yeah.
Yupper. Yupper.
Got one last one from Doug here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Doug has a warning about not getting caught with your local storage and iCloud. He says, with any modern Mac, it's now the case that any cloud storage service is going to want to fill up your internal drive too. In my case, I like my cloud stuff to fully download and synchronize to my main Mac Mini so that I can back it up locally and to Backblaze. At least I hope that's what's happening. It should be. So I paid the Apple tax to get a 4 terabyte boot drive so that my 1 terabyte of iCloud and my 600 gigabytes of OneDrive could all easily live locally. So yeah, make sure if you're syncing a bunch of stuff and you're not just having it stored in the cloud, if you're storing it locally, that you have enough local storage to meet all of your, to match all your cloud storage usage. That's great warning.
It is. Yeah. The cloud is a great ancillary storage. Backup might be the wrong word to use, right. But having data on site, on-prem, is helpful. It can be faster. It can be, you're not beholden to an internet connection. So yeah, just remembering that you might want that and therefore might want storage. Now, you don't, depending on, he doesn't say what kind of Mac he bought here, but if it's
Mac
not
Mini.
It's a Mac Mini. Oh, okay. There you go. Then you don't necessarily need to pay the Apple tax, right? Because you could buy an external drive and sync your non-iCloud storage to that. If you're syncing iCloud storage, your home folder is almost certainly going to be on the internal drive. Yes, there are ways. There are even currently Apple-endorsed ways of doing it, but I still don't recommend it. So, yeah. But, yes.
It's a world of pain.
It's a world of pain. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And even with third-party services, because of the way file provider services works, I think that's what it's called. I forget. Whatever the framework is that Apple forces people like Dropbox to use to sync, also really, really wants that stuff to be in the home folder. So you might have to pay the Apple tax. But there are ways of getting around that with third-party services. But it requires a little bit of jiggering. So, yeah.
Yep.
Yupper. All right. We got a review this week, guys. And thank you for your reviews. You can always visit MacGeekUp.com/review to review the show. APV9 on Apple Podcasts in the United States wrote, 5 stars, absolutely essential listening for Apple users. MacGeekUp is quite simply in a league of its own. The trio has been helping Mac and iOS users for many years, and their depth of knowledge across all things Apple tech is unparalleled in the podcast world. Whether it's macOS, iOS hardware, networking, troubleshooting, or the subtle, why did Apple do that questions, they not only know the answers, they explain them clearly, thoughtfully, and with genuine care for their listeners. What truly sets MacGeekGab apart is the combination of expertise, humility, and generosity. These hosts are not talking at you, they're helping you. Week after week, they empower listeners to understand their tech better and use it more confidently. Thank you for that, APV9. That means a lot. That is the goal.
Yep.
So thank you. Yeah. Amazing.
Yep. Big thanks.
Yep. All right. Shall we do some questions, guys?
Yeah, Dave, Skylar has a question.
Oh, I know Skylar.
Yeah, she says, is there a way to track an Apple TV remote? I can't find it.
Yes. The Apple TV remotes of later generation models have a version of, we'll call it Find My in it, but that's in and of itself misleading because you can't use the Find My app to find your Apple TV remote, which drove me crazy. And drives me crazy every time I have to do this. It's like, I know it has this. Did I not set it up? Am I the idiot here? Like, what? Oh, crap. And then I remember.
Good luck finding the Find My, Dave.
Exactly. Yeah. What you have to do is launch the remote app on your phone and then go to the top of the app where it lists the Apple TV that it's going to be remote controlling, tap that, and it will show you a list of one or more Apple TVs. And for the ones that have findable remote controls, there will be a little find button in that drop-down list. And then you get sort of directional, you know, that Bluetooth, you're hotter, closer, walk farther, move faster, jump up and down, you get to do all that. And it can absolutely help you find the remote. For Skylar, it confirmed that the remote was not in her trash can. And so she was able to find it buried in the couch where of course it was.
Where God always, meant it to be.
Always is.
Where it always is. That's right. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
Unless you put it in the fridge.
Have you done that?
Well, there's that.
No.
Oh, okay.
But I would imagine this is a scenario Somebody that happens. Knows. It's like you get up to get a snack or a drink, right?
And yeah.
You're carrying it with you and... You set it down to grab something or move something and you forget.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm curious.
Those things too.
Are you, did we have this conversation recently? Maybe we did about which remotes you use in your house. You don't use the Apple TV remote in your house, or you do, Adam?
I use it exclusively. My wife absolutely hates it and refuses to use it, so I have to use it while we're watching. But she mostly these days, I mean, I don't. I think I'm the only person that likes to watch content on the actual TV. The rest of the family really? Uses their devices, and most often just their iPhone, which just is appalling to me, but that's okay.
Right.
The three of us.
No one wants to watch a movie on a 6-inch screen.
The three of us the other night we generally watch consume content on the TV. The three of us the other night, we're in this family football pool, and the winner of which gets, well, the ultimate currency, which is bragging rights. And it's with like Lisa's extended family. And so it's made us care about the ends of games because we'll watch like, oh, who's going to get points for this or whatever. And there was a game that was close or whatever and, you know, had 2 minutes left or something. And so we were doing something in the kitchen and Lucas brought it up on his phone. And then the three of us were standing around his phone, laying on the kitchen counter, watching the end of this game. And we talked about it in the moment. It was like, this is the dumbest thing. Like we have a TV in the kitchen that we could turn on, or we could go watch the 65-inch, you know, OLED screen in the living room. But no, there we are.
What's the fun of that?
Yeah, exactly. That was so ridiculous. Ridiculous.
It promotes togetherness. Look how close you were. We were close together to watch it.
True. Yeah. But we were so ingrained with Harmony remotes that when Logitech discontinued the line, I bought a bunch of spare Harmony remotes that I like have sitting in my garage. So if anybody wants one, just let me know because I don't want to use them anymore. And feedback@mackeycap.com. But we almost exclusively use the Apple TV remote. It works. Like everything that we want to do, we do through the Apple TV. And so the remote it just works. It's
the only interface I use with my television. I don't use the TV remote. I don't Apple TV is what I use to access everything. So
I can't find the remote, I'll use my phone remote.
Sure.
Quite often.
Sure.
But my wife will exclusively use the Apple TV remote. She does not use her phone.
Yeah.
Even if there's no other remote in the house.
Okay. To just sit and wait for that.
For that TV to turn itself on.
Will she use the remote app on her phone to find the actual remote?
I don't think she knows she can.
See, that's why we have these tips in the show here, Pete.
Right. Yeah.
That's why we do.
I have to go give her a quick tip after the show.
Yeah.
I'm fairly certain. I have to test this, but I'm fairly certain if you have a HomePod.
Yeah.
That you can have, because of the, you know, the HDMI thing, I think you can have the S lady turn your TV on.
Oh, probably.
Yeah, I bet. Yeah.
Yeah.
It goes through the Home app, and I think it can actually turn the TV on.
That would make sense. Yeah. I have other things that do that, but I don't think they use the Apple TV as the like HDMI CEC control thing or whatever it is. But interesting. Yeah. Glenn has a question while we're having this kind of conversation. It's a good extension anyway. He says, I thoroughly enjoy listening to your show. I've been away from the Apple universe for quite some time. iPhone 3GS and Intel Core 2 Duo MacBook Pro. But last year I dove back in with a MacBook Pro, M1 MacBook or an Apple Silicon MacBook Pro, and then swapped my Samsung for an iPhone this summer. Last week, I followed it up with an iPad Air. Welcome back to the ecosystem. Especially considering how use cases for the MacBook Pro and the iPad overlap even more after the release of iPad OS 26. I'm curious, when do you reach for an iPad versus your MacBook? Some use cases, Glenn says, are obvious. The iPad is best for anything in portrait mode. If I want to use multiple external monitors, then the MacBook is the only choice. The other use cases aren't as obvious. So how do each of you determine what is the best tool to reach for? Pete, do you have an opinion on this?
Haven't given it a whole lot of thought. Obviously, for the airplane, I like the iPad, although I've come to start liking my phone. Because I've got the 17 Pro Max, and that does a nice job of letting me navigate and getting me all the information I need. But if I'm going to be in instrument conditions and shoot at the approach, then I'm going to have up the iPad because it's got a bigger, easier to see when I'm under stress.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
But, used to reach the iPad a lot, especially for remote viewing, you know, TV shows, football games, that sort of stuff when I was out on the road, over my laptop. But then of course, any writing I had to do, never a big fan of anything on the iPad, except back in the day when I had the iPad Pro with the Magic Keyboard. That actually made it nice for writing if I had to. I like the Magic Keyboard.
Yeah.
But that's kind of it. I mean, my MacBook Pro is my main machine. My iPhone's my go-to, and my iPad's third.
How about you, Adam?
Yeah, I would say it's somewhat similar. I have an older iPad now, and I don't thought about replacing it, but I'm using it less and less, especially now since I'm not doing my own podcast. When I was doing my own podcast, the iPad with the Magic Keyboard was my number one tool for doing my prep and my show notes and my browsing and stuff like that. Cause I'd like to, it really comes down to location. So I like to kick back in a comfy place, like my couch or my favorite chair in the living room. And I just found that the iPad being a little bit smaller was my preferred thing for kind of doing that. If I'm actually sitting down to do, you know, quote unquote, real work, it's probably not even the right way to say it, but like if I'm coding or I'm really needing to dig in on something, I'm sitting at the dining table with my MacBook Pro. So it really comes down to kind of what task am I doing more so that, you know, it's like the task for the device. So maybe that's kind of answering this question. So it's like if I'm coding or really digging in on something, or I'm needing to write, you know, documentation or a paper, or like really trying to do like heavy work, I'm going to be on my MacBook Pro. If I'm doing, you know, just, I want to kick back and just consume some content, browse around a little bit or something like that, I'm probably going to grab my iPad.
Yeah.
Just sit on the couch. But, and then, like I said, for actually watching, consuming like video content more and more these days, YouTube or whatever, I'm using my Apple TV.
Yeah.
You know, I'm in my living room on the Apple TV with the big screen.
So. Yeah. My iPad, similar to both of you, my iPad is definitely my third device. My primary iPad, and it's, I'll clarify that, is an iPad Mini 6. And I basically only use it for doom scrolling before I go to sleep. So this is probably bad for my sleep scores and my mental health overall. Right. But I use it. I often will pick it up instead of my Kindle. You know, so instead of reading or whatever, I'll just doom scroll until I start to fall asleep and I put it down. But it rarely leaves the bedroom except when I travel. I'll use it, you know, it because of the size of it. It's great to watch movies on an airplane, even when the size of the tray table is, you know, cramped or whatever. So it works for that. And in hotel rooms and stuff, I'll use it to consume content either on its screen or I HDMI out of that into the hotel room TV. And then I can watch something on the TV in the hotel room from my iPad without having to dedicate my laptop to that purpose. So it gives me the freedom to kind of do both. But yeah, I use my iPad very little, and my MacBook Pro, or my MacBook Air rather, is kind of my primary portable computing device. That when I hesitated about my primary iPad, I would venture to say that I get more utility out of an older iPad Mini that I have that I use for like music stuff, scores and charts and all the things I do on stage. I have the iPad trigger if we have a click track to start a song, or if I have a chart for, you know, to read music or whatever. I just played a gig last night and I have an iPad Mini that I clamp to my hi-hat just kind of off of my left knee. And that's where I read charts. It's right there. And it works great. And I can also, like I said, I can trigger click tracks with it to to give us a starting tempo and that sort of thing. It works great. I haven't gone this far yet, but I easily could also trigger like videos that could play in sync with the song easily from the iPad and HDMI out from there. And I haven't gone quite that far yet, but it's all possible. So the more I think about it, that's the iPad that should probably be my fastest one. is the one that I use here in the studio. And I have a couple of them. I just have a couple of old iPad minis that I say are not useful for anything else other than that. That I kind of, you know, I keep a spare with me because, you know, that's how life goes. But yeah, I use it, and I use it to mix my in-ears too. I'll connect it to the mixer and then get the faders up, and I can control, you know, what I hear in my ears and all that stuff. So yeah. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. The iPad, I don't know what it would take. I don't know what the world would look like for me to like pick up my iPad over my laptop. I find it fascinating when you say you used to prep your show with your iPad. I mean, I've never been able to do that, but I also have had iPad minis. Yeah.
It was iPad with Magic Keyboard, and I used Omni Outliner for my show notes. So, you know, I could split screen it and have some, you know, Safari or Mail on one side and then my notes on the other side. And it was really easy to just take things back and forth. And
yeah,
again, it was more about location though, too, because I just wanted to be like laid back on the couch rather than like sitting in a hard, you know, office chair or whatever. Yep. So, and the iPad was just easier to have on my lap and do that with.
No, it makes sense. Makes sense. I wonder if I would get more utility out of a larger iPad. But as I say that, I know that I want the iPad mini as the form factor on stage. So it's
right.
Like, you know,
I have an 11 inch, which was the perfect, like I had used the larger 12 and sure. a half or whatever it was.
Yeah.
At the time, I don't, is it 13 now? Anyway, 13 inch or whatever.
Yeah.
But, and found that to be too big. Like, and so when they came out with the 11 inch Pro, I went with that, and that had kind of became my form factor. It was kind of the nice balance between my 15 inch laptop and my, you know, iPhone. It was like this good go between
yeah.
size.
Yeah.
It was like not too small, but not too big. So
interesting. Yeah. Curious, folks, how do you use yours? What's been running through your head? What have you been, you know, screaming at the car stereo as we've been having this conversation? What are we missing? I would love to know. Feedback at MacGeekab.com.
You heard him. Feedback at MacGeekab.com.
That's right. Feedback at MacGeekab.com, if I can speak today.
Pete Jurgen wrote in and says, I have very strange behavior with tabs in Safari. It seems like a theme. So far, I only noticed it with iPadOS, and it started with my update to iPadOS 26. I upgraded my iPad from an M1 to an M5 at the same time, but I don't think that's related. Before 26, my workflow was the following. I would open a new tab. I would select a bookmark from my favorites bar. The bookmark would open in the just open tab. Now, the bookmark opens in an additionally new tab. Even clicking on a link on an open website, which always opened in the same tab before, now triggers a new tab. And to make things worse, I have folders in my favorites bar to organize my bookmarks. Clicking on a folder does not open the folder drop-down / window to select a bookmark. It opens every single bookmark in that folder in a separate tab. This behavior does not happen all the time. Sometimes Safari behaves as I expect. And it is not only confined to Safari, it also happens with Firefox. I already browsed the settings and couldn't find anything. Deactivating all extensions didn't help. I was hoping 26.1 would solve this bug. No luck. I was hoping 26.2. Nope. Still there. Do you have any thoughts?
Yeah. Well, Pete's adage comes into play here, which is the only thing worse than in aviation, the only thing worse than an electrical problem is an intermittent electrical problem. And what he's got here is a problem that shows up sometimes. So add to that the two variables, and you've got a whole can of worms on your hand trying to sort it out. But I think there's a possible path to go for a fix. The first thing I would try is if you have a Magic Keyboard, and he doesn't say whether he does or not, the Magic Keyboard, a mouse or a trackpad connected, then I would go to Settings, General, Trackpad and Mouse, and toggle the secondary click off if it's on, and then turn it back on and then test. Even if it already looks correct, cycling is going to force the iPad OS to reset how it's interpreting your clicks. And if the behavior persists, then you have the nuclear option to go to Settings, General, Transfer, Reset iPad, Reset, Reset All Settings. That won't get rid of any of your data, but it should force the iPad OS to rebuild pointer, mouse, gesture interpretation along with all those things. That would be my first inclination, is to toggle that off and on, and then maybe reset all settings.
Yeah.
And then keep us posted.
Yeah.
See what else it may be. It's because it sounds like it's something that's a feature, not a bug, that has come in with, you know, iPad or Apple's not looking to fix whatever it is. They don't consider what he has a bug.
Do you have any thoughts on this, Adam? No.
No, I'm a little stumped. Although I thought the folder behavior was normal behavior, right? That it would open all tabs. Is that not normal behavior?
No, if you like hold down on it, you can have it open all tabs, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. Oh, so he's just saying he clicks the folder and it doesn't drop down, it just opens them all. Oh yeah, that's weird.
Yeah, so I would have gone down the same path you did, Pete, and when you started going down that path, I was like, okay, well, what else? And racking my brain, no. So I plugged this into ChatGPT to just see what ideas it comes up with, and of course it started with exactly what you said. You know, if you've got an external input device, try that, and it's a reasonable thing. There is an accessibility setting in keyboards for full keyboard access, and it says to toggle that too. Again, if you don't so that, you know, might be. There is a Safari setting. If you go to Settings, Safari tabs for opening links in background, that might be one worth looking at here. I'm going to try and pull it up on my iPhone because I don't have an iPad within very close reach. But yeah, there is, where is the setting here? I know I've seen it, but. Check that in Safari settings. Oh, yeah, in tabs, you can have open links in new tab or in background. So try changing that to whatever it isn't and see what happens, because that might be part of this. I realize it's not, it's happening also in Firefox, which is what makes me think it's obviously more system-wide than just Safari, but who knows? Maybe Firefox is inheriting setting. I don't know. Yeah. So yeah, I don't have a magic fix. Go ahead.
The only other thing I can think of, but I would imagine this would manifest itself in many areas of the operating system, not just in the bookmarks, but could there be some kind of accessibility feature that got turned on, specifically kind of mobility or clicking features? You might just double check all those settings and make sure some weird gesture or, you know, click thing didn't get accidentally activated or something.
Yeah. Yeah. Huh.
Yeah. I don't know what it would be, but, you know, like,
same.
I've found this, run into this trap on my Mac before, because like, I think there's a shortcut at like tapping the option key 5 times or something turns on like mouse keys or whatever, and suddenly my keyboard's not working right.
Yeah, right.
I've done that to myself before.
Yep.
You know, where I'd set something down and it either hit the button or whatever. But weirder things have happened.
Yeah. That accessibility thing could absolutely be. I like that. I'm on board with that for sure. All right, let's see what else we have here. We should do some cool stuff found. Speaking of cool stuff found, I will take this as a ham-fisted opportunity to share one of my favorite pieces of gear that I just rely on all the time, and again, happens to be one of our CES 2026 sponsors, and that's Eero. They're on board supporting us again this year and they are supporting my home network every second of every day. They are the Wi-Fi that I use. I test a lot of different things, and I always wind up, you know, back to baseline with Eero after I'm finished testing something, because it's just so reliable. Their mesh just works. It is the default recommendation that I make when somebody asks me, what mesh can I buy? You know, just like, start there, you know, and then we can have a conversation. But they really just kind of get it right. So our thanks to Eero for all the support with CES for the last couple of years, in fact. So indeed. We will be producing. I mentioned that Pete and I are going to be putting up videos. You want to subscribe to our YouTube channel and our Instagram so that you can see all the little snippets of things that we find during the week next week. And we will be creating every single one of those with Ecamm Live. And Ecamm is, in fact, one of our CES sponsors this year. They make it so easy to do those kinds of videos and all kinds of different things. Ecamm Live is fantastic. It's even got Zoom integration now. So lots of great stuff there. So make sure to check that out, too. Yeah. Of course, I have links in the show notes for both. Yeah.
And I like their Stream Deck integration, because they send it out with their Ecamm. They give you the keys to hit to start and stop recording, pause, change scenes. It's awesome.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
I love me some Ecamm.
Yeah, we're gonna be relying on it heavily.
Yes,
starting very very soon. Yep. and have every other year, by the way. Like, this is not new for this year, because they're a sponsor. Yeah. We reached out to them because we've been using it exclusively, because it's the right tool. So we've been talking a lot now that it's January, and although we're recording this hours before the year tips over, we haven't heard any news about Mac Updater being picked up by anyone. So we're continuing to look into alternatives for Mac Updater, and Steve sent in something called Latest. He said, John Siracusa recommended Latest to me last year when the Mac App Store wouldn't properly push out updates for his app Switchglass. It works really well and has been a fairly reliable Mac updater alternative for me. And not to bury the headline, but if you're not familiar with Switchglass, it's an incredibly useful tool that lets you put the dock on all of your external monitors. More specifically, it will let you customize each display's dock so you only see the icons for the apps running on that particular screen. How did I not know about Switchglass? All right, so Latest and Switchglass. Love that. Thank you, Steve. Wow. Did you guys know about Switchglass?
I did not. No.
Huh.
That is cool, though.
Yeah, it's a lot of customization, too. Huh. Fascinating. Customizable docs. I got to think about this. That might change the way I do things. All right. Anyway, and then there's Latest. Great. Fun. Thank you, Steve.
Cool.
All right.
Arvidas has a little security tool for us. It says, good afternoon. I wanted to share a new Mac security tool, Mac Persistence Checker, that scans macOS, analyzes each item for risk, and gives you information to decide what should stay and what should go. It's over on GitHub, and we'll have a link in the show notes at maccast.com. Or maccast.com. Jeez, man, I'm falling back.
Wow.
Macgeekagab.com, excuse me. I just got caught.
Wow. That's the first time that's happened.
I know. I can't believe I haven't fallen back into that.
Yeah. Yes,
there's not much happening on maccast.com. Don't go there anymore. Macgeekagab.com.
Yeah,
in the show notes we'll have a link to Mac Persistence Checker.
Oh, this is okay. This is pretty cool. It checks launch daemons and launch agents and login items and kernel extensions and all of those things, huh? And then does a risk assessment on each of them. Okay, I'm in. Yep, love that idea. That's great. Fun.
Cool.
Yep. Next up, Alan shares with us. We were talking in a recent episode about how to replicate user preferences from Mac to Mac, or replicating an entire installed software config. And Alan says there's an open source tool that's much used in the Linux corporate world called Ansible. It allows you to set up a profile and then execute it on the target machine or on multiple machines. All that is needed is SSH access with admin privileges. Options include invoking package managers, transferring files, and running scripts. And he says Jeff Geerling on YouTube has talked about using it to set up his Macs. So we will put a link to this YouTube video for us all to peruse. So, yeah, thank you for that. That's great. Love that. Thanks, Alan.
Huh. Yep.
Cool. Yeah, for sure. We got time for one more, don't you think, Adam?
Sure. Dan has one for us. He says, hey, guys, this might have already been mentioned on the show, but it's worth mentioning it again. I don't know if it has. For those of us, who, like me, like to capture notes from podcasts, it's a great tool for this, and it is an iOS app called Snipped, S-N-I-P-D. It is a podcast player and service that allows you to put bookmarks called snips, as you listen. It then creates a transcript and an AI-generated summary for each snip. No more having to go back and try to find the specific points you wanted to capture. You can try it for free, but it is a subscription service. Thanks for all you guys do. Great podcast. I don't miss an episode. Dan. Now, that's kind of cool.
Yeah. Huh. That could be perfect for like this show in particular, right? Like that's right. Great. Huh. Love that. All right. Yeah. Thanks, Dan. Yeah. Good stuff.
Makes it a lot easier than just writing down everything you hear.
You know, we do. We have supported
for you.
Yeah. We have supported transcripts, but yeah. For a long time, we've had exhaustive show notes for an even longer time. And right. Now Apple Podcasts even supports those transcripts, which makes life even better. So actually, I guess, yeah, they do. They support transcripts and they'll create their own, too, if you don't provide one to Apple. You, the podcaster. Like, yeah. So, yeah, fun stuff. All right. Well, I'm glad you're okay, Pete. Adam and I were both, you know, worried when, well, it's unlike you to just, you know, blow off the show and not be reachable. So, you know.
Because I thought Friday was New Year's Eve. Not today.
Okay. Yeah. All right. That's fine. You know that we're getting on an airplane on Saturday, right, Pete?
Is that next Wednesday?
Yes. Next Wednesday. Sure. I'll be at your house to pick you up.
Holy cow. Oh, man. Yeah. I rarely is my calendar that broken, but my brain was that broken this morning.
It's been crazy the last, like, just.
It has.
You know, I like. I don't like it when Christmas falls, like, on Wednesday, because then it's like, well, do we work before or after? How do we do this? What do we do? But I don't know. For some reason, it's been nuts this year. But anyway, we're here.
Well, I got to say, it is the very first thing on my calendar this morning. So it was hidden right at the top where I couldn't possibly see it unless I looked at it.
That's
so.
Right. That's right. That's right. Thanks for everything, folks. Here's to a new year for all of us. Happy New Year to all of you. Thanks to CashFly for providing all the bandwidth to get the show from us to you. I know I thanked all of our CES sponsors. One thing I have yet to mention and will is that our monthly giveaway at MacGeekHub.com/giveaway includes two of our CES sponsors. You can sign up to enter to win a copy of Ecamm Live or Carbon Copy Cloner 7. So make sure you go and sign up at MacGeekHub.com/giveaway. If you missed having Pete here for the whole episode, you can listen to whole episodes with Pete of his other podcast, So There I Was. You can listen to Adam's debut film podcast. You can listen to my Business Brain and Gig Gab podcasts. And yeah, thanks for hanging out. Fun. Here we are. Another year, guys. I think we're going to make it to the new year.
Right.
Yes.
We just might.
I think we will. Any lasting advice, Adam?
It's a new year. Don't get caught.
Made on a Mac. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Later.